It's time to drink some gin.
Oh, best day of the week. What a good excuse to drink midweek. It's very healthy. It's very normal. We love Tuesday Booze Day.
And we're not just going to drink. We're going to taste it. We're going to introduce ourselves. We're going to find out about it. So we only need a little bit of a tasting. And then we can save the rest for Friday when we can drink it long and leisurely and enjoy the Friday talking about the topic. So that's what we're going to do. We are going to taste that gin.
Should Tuesday warm up?
Oh, yeah.
Tuesday warm-up. We're just getting ready for the Friday. We're just having a little taste. And Emma's going to join us and tell us all about it.
Exactly. With the guest. So we can taste their gin, find out what we're drinking on Friday. And that gives you the opportunity to go and buy some if you want to join us in drinking it on Friday night.
Oh, very fancy.
Right, so we have our tasting room. We have Emma and Anya in the room with me.
Hello.
And we are welcoming David Cullen to taste some gin with us before our episode on Friday.
Hi.
And of course, our gin is rather linked to the theme for this first episode of the series because we are drinking moonshot gin. David, tell me, why are we drinking moonshot gin? What is this connection?
Obviously, there's quite a large backstory to this. And it's a backstory to do with kind of the topic or perhaps the broader context of the topic we're going to be talking about rather than anything to do with gin itself. The topic that I think we're going to be talking about is sex in space. Now, that's quite a broad topic, and my interests, and I think the reason why you kind of came across me, is that we are looking at one very specific aspect of kind of sex in space, to do with the potential for kind of sexual interactions among space tourists in the kind of emerging space tourism sector. So that's the details of, I think, what we're going to talk about broadly. And then when it came to, I think, some kind of email conversations we had leading up to this about choice of a gin, I think it was Emma or somebody who suggested moonshot gin.
Thinking about what gin could go with space.
And then that resulted in quite a few emails elaborating quite a detailed backstory, which I think in the end we decided we found a backstory that covered the evolution of the solar system, the emergence of life and the future of life of humans spreading throughout the solar system, all captured in a gin-based drink.
I mean, it was quite an email chain. It really, really was. I mean, if we're going to do it, we're doing it properly. I love that, you know, a small tangent then turned into a very large one that's taken us literally to the, you know, the start of the universe.
Which came back to a very tight but very wide-ranging story to do with all aspects of basically humanity in space, which, of course, a kind of subset of is kind of obviously human reproduction in space.
We're putting a lot on a single gin here. I love it. Go on, moonshot.
So much on one single gin. But actually, the gin, choice of gin, was like a small part of this email chain of conversation we had. Because, David, you took that gin challenge to the next level as you went off into this whole cocktail concoction. And I have to admit that I looked at it. I'm like, what on earth is this and why would we want to put this in a glass? So can you tell me about some of those things that you were suggesting and why? And I think what I did love was that one of your suggestions for the name of the cocktail was 42, which I'm guessing is just because it's the meaning of life, the universe and everything.
Which, as we've already said, effectively is that. It's kind of the evolution of the solar system and so on and so forth.
Which gin, of course, was involved.
Nothing happens without gin. Come on, it's a lubricant that, you know, helps us in everyday life.
Yes, we'll perhaps come to that in a minute. Then I think it wasn't just me, it was yourselves contributed. Somehow there was discussion about cocktails. Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking of other space-based aspects that are being considered at the moment broadly within the space community, of which I've also had some kind of interaction or involvement with, that could influence some of these other components. And therefore, we went down the, or I think I asked the route of, is there any gin that is either flavoured with or has some other relationship to algae? In fact, specifically single-cell photosynthetic algae called spirulina.
And if there isn't, why isn't there? And who is going to produce it?
I can give you a few reasons, Anya. But yeah, sure. I mean, I thought, is there something that's involved in a production or something that uses the base spirit where these, you know, single-celled organisms would be involved? I reached out to a very, very geeky group of lovely gin heads called the Gin Genies over WhatsApp. I was like, genies, can you help me? They were just like, no, I don't think so. We tried.
No, you're crazy.
Yeah. spoilers, there are going to be a few of these, I think, coming up, given conversations we've already had. A few episodes with some, we've tried our best, but it's provoked some really interesting conversations. And this was the first and definitely the most, yeah. The one that went on some brilliant little tangents. Well, we could do this. No, we could do that. Yeah, yeah.
And so we didn't get an algae-based gin. No. We got a moonshot gin. So I think we ought to start with talking about the gin. So. Then,
and at least,
Emma,
you know, pouring a bit. We've talked for quite a while without even having any.
Yeah, good. Which was, of course, the reason for me asking the question. Because, you know, as we're listening.
And I've still got a lot more questions specifically about moonshot gin.
Well, so Moonshot Gin, it's part of the Boutique Gin Company. They have the Boutique Whiskey Company and the Boutique Gin Company, and they really innovate in the kind of space of those two spirits. It came out of the larger company that owns Master of Malt, which is why they started with whiskey, but obviously with the gin kind of boom that we found ourselves in, they moved their attentions to gin. They've made lots of different gins. And lots of different types and styles, lots of different approaches. I actually made a gin in Evanston, Chicago, Illinois, that they bottled for me called Monkey's Tea Party, which was wonderful,
yes,
which has got tea in it. Moonshot was one of their maybe earlier innovations, 2017, when they were just thinking about different things that they could do. And I mean, I know the guys there. I reckon it happened. Has anyone done anything with a botanical that's not from Earth? And I imagine where that's where this all really started. But as with them, you know, so they think, oh, right, let's see if we can get some moon rock, which you can. I think it's a lunar meteorite, as we thought. So the meteorite comes to Earth. They take some of the lunar rock and distill it. And they were like, actually, you know, could we go a bit further? So they send it as near, they send it into near space. It's not real space.
David shaking
exactly,
his head.
We have to say it's not real, you know, not real space. 24 kilometres up, though, is a fairly high bit to go up.
It doesn't count.
I mean, the atmospheric pressure there is obviously a lot lower than it is on Earth. I don't think that would really make much of a difference to the botanicals, but they do send all of them up there. But then there is, does it make a difference?
Okay, if you go up to that altitude,
yeah,
and you reduce the air pressure, which obviously it is, and if the botanicals, when they were sent up on this little kind of stratospheric balloon, then the logical view is that you send it up there, you reduce the pressure, therefore you encourage any volatiles to then be lost. And so all you're doing is kind of losing any flavor or losing flavor compounds so that when you bring it back to Earth, then you're likely to have a less flavorsome gin than if you use those same botanicals without exposing them to a vacuum.
I mean, I think they should have talked to you before they got carried away with themselves, really, shouldn't they? I mean, it is quite interesting that they then, when they bring it back down to Earth, they then put it in a vacuum still. So they reduce the atmospheric pressure, but they do that in a closed system using a vacuum still. So they're not losing those kind of flavours. Also, it means that you can distill the alcohol at a much lower temperature. So I think one of the things we were talking about is using the algae and things. Has anyone put algae in a gin? And my first thought was, oh, God, well, if you apply heat to anything mushy or anything like that, it's going to extract some nasty compounds. So, but actually, if you were going to try anything for whatever reason with algae, then maybe the vacuum still would be the way forward, because, you know, reducing the pressure, reducing that boiling point. But still.
So if anyone out there is listening and thinking what gin hasn't been tried yet, then algae might be the way to go.
So I'm more interested in the moon rock bit. So you have confirmed that they did have somewhere in the production process,
yep,
this batch of gin was exposed to a piece of the moon. How much in what kind of size vat?
God knows.
Oh, I mean, it's got to be
these are trade secrets.
Well,
aren't
the thing
they?
Is, I imagine it's quite pricey to get a confirmed piece of lunar meteorite, and as well, I imagine it's quite inert. So they'll probably just use the same one for every batch, maybe.
So I'm assuming it really contributes to the backstory rather than the actual flavor, the actual chemical flavor profile.
I would,
but I'm assuming that with gin, part of the experience of drinking it is not just the the chemistry, the flavor profiles. Part of it is also the combination of where you basically the kind of psychological input into how you appreciate it.
Oh yeah, gin always tastes better when it's A, free, and B, drunk somewhere lovely and like, oh, this feels like the right spot to have a gin.
Or when it's drunk on a podcast.
Yes.
Which I feel we should pour
yes.
some in glass.
Let's do it. I'm doing my classic. I thought about starting new series, new me. I'm going to take my first sip straight from the bottle as time-honoured tradition.
So this is 46% ABV, so you are going to get a bit of a tingle when you try it neat. So have your first sip and then let it sit on your palate for a bit and then have your second sip. You'll be able to hopefully pick out a few more of the botanicals on that second sip once your palate is kind of acclimatised to the ethanol.
Oh, there is a tingle.
Yeah.
There's definitely a tingle. Hmm.
And of course, moonrock isn't a botanical that we'd be able to pick out because none of us have ever licked a moonrock before. So
I mean,
we don't
I
really
David,
know what
you?
It would taste like anyway.
Speak for yourself.
Know, right?
Have you licked a moonrock, David?
I haven't knowingly done so.
Good answer. Good answer.
So despite all of the talk about moon and moonshot and sending the botanicals up into near space, it is actually a London dry gin. I think they really missed out on a trick. They should have maybe labelled it space dry gin or something. That could be quite fun. But as we know, London dry gin is a style of making gin. Doesn't matter where you make it. Doesn't matter what you put in there. As long as you are making it in that style, you are allowed to use a vacuum still. Doesn't have to be one of the big shiny copper stills. So long as all of your botanicals go in and you add nothing after distillation, which tells us where that moon rock ends up. It ends up in the vacuum still itself. It doesn't get added after. Into the vat of gin. So the kind of batch size we're talking about is probably only the size of a kind of vacuum still. What they are allowed to do is they can make a concentrate. So because you can add more alcohol and water afterwards. So what they might do is make a very heavy concentrate using the botanicals, using the moon rock, and then they'll cut it with more alcohol to take it down to the bottling strength, yeah, taste-wise, and then the bottling strength ABV-wise. So you've got some classic botanicals, our holy trinity that we always talk about, juniper, coriander, angelica are all in there. I think the coriander seed is very citrusy on the nose. It's kind of coming through there. You've got orange and lemon that complement that, though, I think, that give it a bit of boost, especially the lemon, I think, on the nose of this one. And then in the mid palate, you've got lots of spices that they've sent up. And maybe that's the thing. Maybe they boosted it because of the inadvertent effect that sending it all the way out there had on these poor botanicals. So you've got cardamom, cinnamon, cubic, and licorice in there. Mm. And then the final one is obviously your...
Which, given what David's saying, then they could have been completely overpowering and in your face and a horrible gin, but tempered by their little
journey.
Well, I am mixing mine with classic tonic water combo, and I'm adding some cucumber because it's all we had in the fridge. So I'm hoping that works.
I feel like it will. It's quite fresh, isn't it?
Yeah. Which cucumber, that's pretty good. That's not like an easy peeler that's, you know, desiccated that you just found in the fridge.
I did have
bowl.
To chop off the like slightly grim end of the cucumber and then find a good slice. But hey, that's on being in your early 20s.
Well, so I'm actually going Cheers. All out because of our email chain, David. So we were talking, I haven't managed to get the spirulina, but one of my favourite cocktails is the martini. And there is a martini that I told you about called the burnt martini, which adds a little splash of whiskey in there when you're then going to stir your cocktail. Speaking of stirring, I do have, because it's space, a telescopic bar spoon. How good is that? Everyone doesn't know. I just made my small bar spoon very, very, very long using its little telescopic handle. So we're going to use the peatiest whiskey I have at home. Not the biggest peat. If you're going to do that, these polyaromatic hydrocarbons, which are kind of, you know, that material you find in comets that may have come to Earth and started all this kind of primordial soup that we have that led to us and life. And eventually, you know.
Well done. So actually, that's the backstory for the kind of evolution of the universe, or evolution of the solar system, and the emergence of life.
Oh, casual. You're very good, right? Emma. Well
Thank
done.
You.
Well
Thank
done.
You. Emma's getting star. All the brownie points. You do realise that Emma's setting us up for failure here for the rest of the episode, you know?
The what do we know section is going to be lacking.
Yeah. If anyone wondered out there what the highest polyaromatic hydrocarbon whiskey is, it would be something like Laphroaig, something that's super peaty. And the reason these whiskies get the pH in there is because you take, in some whiskies, they take that barley and they dry the grain over peat. So the furnaces, they fuel with the peat, and that adds this kind of very smoky element to it. Then also you've got most whiskies are rested in charred barrels anyway, so all whiskies will have some element of it. But you have those ones that are kind of rested over the peat that make it really, really smoky. The closest I've got is a bit of Lagavulin 16, which is one of my favourite whiskies of all time. So I'm very, very happy at the moment. So all you do, splash a bit of that in over your ice, give it a bit of a stir, then chuck your gin in, give it a bit more of a stir, and job's a good one. We're happy.
Nice.
This is like the best episode in ages. Good excuse to drink martinis. Sold.
And in quantity wise, what are we talking about, Emma?
A couple of mils of the whiskey, probably max. You can as well, if it's a really peaty whiskey, you don't want it super smoky, you can put the whiskey in and then strain it out. I just think that's a waste of good whiskey.
So you're using the whiskey instead of a vermouth?
You can put a vermouth in as well if you want.
So these elements that we've talked about the whiskey. The other ones, there was spirulina.
Spirulina.
What's that then? Spirulina. I was thinking a spiralizer, and I'm about to start getting my vegetables out.
It's a microorganism, single cell microorganism, which looks a little bit like a spiral under the microscope. So it is an algae, single cell algae that obviously Earth grows on Earth, but within space, it's being proposed as a part of a biologically based life support system for astronauts. Where the spirulina can be grown in what we call photobioreactors, so basically a fermentation type vessel, but with light added to it, so that they can photosynthesize. And of course, photosynthesis takes in carbon dioxide and water and produces oxygen and biomass. And of course, in a closed spacecraft, astronauts are exhaling CO2. And, of course, that contains oxygen within the CO2. And so the idea would be that you would then use the algae in a bioreactor to then take the CO2 out of the atmosphere. It would use it by photosynthesis to do two things. One is to convert it back to oxygen that could obviously be then breathed by the astronaut. But secondly, to then take water to convert that some of that carbon from the carbon dioxide into biomass. Basically, it grows. And so therefore, the spirulina would be used in these bioreactors on board to do two things. One is to convert CO2 to oxygen, and the other one, of course, is to then use the kind of growing biomass of the spirulina as a potential kind of nutrient food source, food supplement. And of course, you can go down to your local kind of high street supermarket or health food shop and buy packets of dried
powdered
spirulina and such, which you can use as a health drink or as a health
So
food.
If I mix that in with my gin, I can pretend that I'm having one of those healthy, like I'm just drinking my greens, like Instagram girly type drinks, and I can just tell myself that I'm being really healthy.
Yeah, but it might be disgusting. And therefore,
all of those are. That's what they don't tell you. All of those drinks are disgusting.
And there was one other as well, wasn't there? So there was the whiskey, there was the spirulina, and there was something else.
There was the garnish. So again, I think there was discussion initially about rosemary. And again, we've been looking not at rosemary in space, but if you go to Mars, how could you conveniently convert local Martian resources into usable materials that you can then construct things from. And again, thinking about Earth biology, what Mars has readily available is plenty of carbon dioxide. The atmosphere is mainly made of carbon dioxide. Plus, there is plenty of water around. There's kind of water ice in most places on Mars. And so you have ready access to water and CO2. Mm. So just like we've talked about with the spirulina inside a spacecraft, on the surface of Mars, you could use photosynthesis to capture that atmospheric CO2 along with some kind of Martian water. And if you had the right Earth biology, you could convert that into biomass. And therefore, one of the things we suggested is whether you could use some fast-growing Earth plants like bamboo in a Martian greenhouse to then effectively convert that CO2 and water into biomass, and in this case, biomass that could then be used for construction, either as by kind of shredding it and then using the bamboo fibers to create kind of materials to kind of construct things from. And so that's where the bamboo came from. In terms of support.
I mean, not now, of course, so I'm kicking myself because I could have been stirring my gin with a bamboo straw.
With a bamboo straw. I was going to say.
Could have done that. Could have done that.
You're thinking about that and I'm being super on brand and I've gone straight to the Doc 2 episode, Waters on Mars, with David Tennant, where the water on Mars turns them all into like weird, they're like frothing water out of the mouth. And I'm like, don't plant anything on Mars. I've seen how that's going to go. It's a really bad idea.
So the only way we try to make this more realistic was to realise that perhaps bamboo wasn't the optimum plant to use and that we should use cannabis or industrial hemp as actually a more efficient way of converting that CO2 and water into biomass. So the kind of the last bit we looked at was, in fact, should we be using industrial hemp, basically cannabis, grown cannabis on Mars.
I'm in Bristol, so if we do need some cannabis, I could probably get it in very, very quickly.
But on that note, how is your martini?
It's amazing.
Emma?
I'm so happy right now.
Good.
I mean, the gin is perfect for it because it's super junipery.
I'm jealous.
And then has a little bit of spice that comes to after, which mellows it. But I think, you know, I just like love Lagavulin as well. So it's a perfect combo for me.
Well, yeah. We'll let Emma go and drink her martini.
I will. Thank you so much. Lovely to meet you, David. And I look forward to hearing the episode.
Go.
Exciting.
Lovely. Thank you very much. Enjoy your martini and we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye. Well, that was the gin thoroughly tasted.
I feel like I've tasted it perhaps a little too much and Tuesday Brews Day might turn into Wine Wednesday tomorrow.
Well, you've got to save some of that gin for Friday when we can have the rest of the conversation with our guest.
I'm looking forward to it.
At least we've tasted and we know what it is that we're drinking and we know why we're drinking it. And then we could just relax with the topic.
Ah, oh, I can't wait. Sarah, in the meantime, if people need a bit more gin and topic before their Friday, where can they find us?
Oh, they can find us on social media at Topic Gin.
Lovely.
Or they could head over to our website. We're ginandtopic.com. And if they don't want to wait till Friday, they can always go and listen to some past episodes whilst they're waiting.
Brilliant. Love it. We'll see you Friday.
See you then.